This episode of The Profit Express is brought to you by Corbett Public Relations, promoting and protecting businesses and brands for over 30 years. Please visit them at CorbettPR.com. That's CorbettPR.com. Well, hello and welcome to The Profit Express. I am Tim Healy, and I'm inviting you to join me each and every week so together we can win the battle for business. So thanks so much for being on board today. Now, as I often start, I start off with a question for you. Do you think you can find opportunity in disaster? Well, the good answer is yes, you can. Now, if you're in the air travel business, you know all too well April of 2020. One day in particular, April 7th of 2020, air travel dropped by 95%. That's right, 95% at the very beginning and the height of the pandemic. So if you are in the air travel business, what did you do? If you're the CEO of a company, did you bury your head in the sand? Did you panic? Or did you dust yourself off, take a deep breath, get both of your feet under you, and try to find out where the opportunity for growth really can be? Well, the good news is today's guest did just that. And he is Nick Tarascio. He's the CEO of Ventura Air Services. Their focus is aircraft sales, maintenance, and air charter services. And we're going to have a conversation today about how he and his decisions not only helped his company survive the pandemic, but more importantly, grow in the pandemic. So I know his message is one for everybody listening, whether you're in the air travel business or not. And it's just a very unique conversation, especially with somebody who's been in one of the hardest hit industries. So it's a pleasure to welcome aboard the Profit Express, Nick Tarascio. Nick, how are you today?
Doing well. Happy to be here.
Well, thank you very much. There have, as you are well aware, certain industries, food being one of them, air travel, of course, as you know, the other, that was just absolutely hammered in the very beginning of the pandemic. There's some crazy statistics out there. So I think for those listening, I know I would love to get a sense of what were you thinking back then when it all hit the fan and you took that first big deep breath. What were you thinking as far as the impact on your business?
So it's interesting because, again, I'm going to talk a little bit about the pilot mindset potentially at some point today, but I immediately went to that, which is if I was trained when I'm in an airplane and something goes wrong, I'm not thinking about big picture. I'm not looking at 30,000 foot view. I'm just trying to say, what is the current reality we're in? So let's really understand before we do anything. And I think I didn't have time to think, to be honest. It was not about worrying about the future. It was like right now, before I even know what to feel, what is this world? What is happening? So what are the rules? What are the regulations? What are the changes? What are other people experiencing? What are the trends? What does the news say? So I think we just went into this insane data collection mode that said like nothing other than pull in the info. It probably was in like maybe a couple of weeks of executing on that reality that we started to really think about what are the bigger implications here. But it's like, I mean, we knew right away, we always say in an airplane, like altitude is oxygen, right? Like when you have altitude, you have time to solve things. Even if the engines quit, you have time to do stuff as you're gliding to the ground. Well, cash is altitude in a business. So the first thing we said is how much cash do we have? Cool. We're not going to need to close the doors next week. So let's quickly assess what the reality is. Let's do everything we can to just maintain visibility of our cash gauges at that point. And that was our initial reaction.
So, and again, you're not just the CEO of Ventura Air, you're also a pilot, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
So you've got those worlds and experiences of being a pilot and being able to marry that with the CEO. Cash is oxygen, I like that. I like that a lot. So now, Ventura Air has, I think it's roughly 50 employees.
That's right.
So for all Americans, for the world, when the pandemic hit, there was lots of fear, there was lots of anxiety for a number of different reasons, for your own health, economically, et cetera. So as the CEO, what did you do to manage the fear and the anxiety of your workforce, of your staff, of your people?
Yeah, and that is, again, I always draw it back to airplanes, is communicate, communicate, communicate. No one wants to be in uncertainty. So I very quickly, I mean, and my whole team, and I don't take all the credit for this, but my executive team, my strategic team, they're incredible. And I was getting feedback from our HR team, like, hey, people are nervous. They don't know what to do. They're freaking out. They're saying, this is the end of the world for 3 years. Nothing's going to come back. We're all going to go to business. And I said, all right, we got to start doing some video messages. So this rig that I have here, I actually have a studio in my apartment. So I said, well, let's do a high quality audio video cast to the team. Let's make sure I can answer people's questions live, which was a little bit daring. I was like, I actually want to have it more of like a town hall where if you guys have questions, ask the questions, because everyone's probably feeling what you're feeling or wondering what you're wondering. So you're doing them all a service by asking the questions, having the courage. And I said, I'll just be completely authentic. When I'm scared, I'll tell you I'm scared. When I don't know, I'll tell you I don't know. But I will give you everything I know, and I'll be completely transparent. And I think that was, it was helpful, because at least people said, okay, we don't know what's coming, but we know the guy at you know, the guy in the cockpit, he's in control. He's at least doing everything he can. He hasn't shut down emotionally. He hasn't started arguing with reality, and he's not freaking out.
So now you went to video. It sounds like pretty quick. I don't know exactly in the timeline, but you chose video as a way to connect. I assume, you know, in the airline business, whether it's pilots, you have remote employees, I would imagine.
That's right.
Okay. Do you think that, because I'm a big proponent in the power of video, do you think the simple act of using video as a tool helps you connect on a deeper level with the employees?
Well, I mean, if you've ever heard that stat that communication is only about 7% what you say.
And oh, yeah, the UCLA like study. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. So what I realized is that anybody could write an email that sounds like some, you know, some speechwriter wrote it, and anybody could do all the pleasantries, but I wanted them to see my face. I actually needed them to see that I did not have fear in my face. I wasn't visibly stressed out, because that communicates something, which is, hey, if Nick can be calm during this, and he knows more than all of us in the company as far as what the realities are of financials and where he thinks the future is going, if he's visibly calm, that works. So I do believe in the power of, I mean, if I could be in front of them, I would have done it in front of everybody. But I was also like, let me not do something stupid and stand in front of everyone and have a super spreader event. So I said, we leaned on video a lot. It's only every week or every other week I was doing video casts to speak to the team and try to allay the updates and talk to their fears.
Did you have, was there a panic moment for you? I mean, I, you know, we all like to think we have a big S on our chest, you know, as a CEO, as leaders. Did you have one of those moments in the beginning where you're like, oh gosh, I'm not feeling good?
Surprisingly, the thing that's interesting is, I mean, I think it's the way I'm wired. And someone recently told me about the concept of counterphobia. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
No.
When people feel fears and then they run away.
Yeah.
There's some of us that are wired really strange, where we feel fear and we run head on at it, that it's almost like a desire to take control over the fear. So it turns out I'm probably counterphobic, which I think a lot of entrepreneurial people are. They get a thrill. They get almost their validation comes from saying, I'm not going to let the fear stop me and control my life. So in many ways, I'd say that I think I went into this like incredible, I've got this. This is what I'm built for. I'm built to deal with chaos. It's almost like I become super attuned. It's almost like my flow state happens when there's a lot of chaos and everyone else is shutting down.
Right.
The most panicked I got was more that I wasn't panicked. I was just pissed off. Was when we went through Chase to go for the PPP funds.
Sure. Yeah.
When it first opened, everything collapsed. Like the whole system fell apart.
Yeah.
Because they hit them all with those auto requests. And then they said, you know what? For the big banks, we're going to push it back. And then also Chase said, well, we're going to control the way we give our people the money. And we realized we ended up on the end of the line. And that was the moment where I said, if because of other people's incompetence, we get kicked off the line for PPP and don't get that first round,
right,
that put us in a really challenging situation. So I was mad. I was angry. But that also gave me a ton of adrenaline to just not sleep and just keep trying and opening. And we actually opened up another relationship with a different bank.
Really?
Yeah. Okay,
well, hey, yeah. Yeah, that was for a lot of businesses, especially at first round when everybody's trying to figure it out. There was definitely some chaos in those moments. Now, the air travel business, you know, when people think air travel, a lot of people probably think of the commercial airlines first. Of course, you're in the private, in the air charter world. So we're 1 year into the pandemic as somebody who's in the industry, and yours is a family-based business, correct?
That's right.
So it's it's generational, which is, I always love those stories, by the way. We'll get to that in a moment.
No pressure.
How do you see, as an executive in the business, what's happening to the commercial side of air travel a year into the pandemic? Where are they right now?
You know, I don't spend a lot of time in that part of the industry, but I do trend it. And I have people that I've used to, you know, I used to work with, the relationships of people that have been in those, you know, have gone to the airlines. My observation is that, their offerings are not, they're not built for where we are today, unfortunately. So, you know, again, like an airline business is running at such low margin that you have to nail what the market wants of you with what you have. And it's not easy to scale up and down, right? Like, just giving back an airplane is not easy. We have to train pilots. We have to invest a lot of money before we can even use our employees right. to do what we hired them to do. So it's an industry that is not able to pivot on a dime by nature of what it is. And an airline, I think, is an even harder thing to do that on. They have to buy, you know, they have to buy their gate access at different airports, and they have to build out these routes over time. So I think, unfortunately, given an unprecedented shift in market demand and mm-hmm. how things happen in the world and how airports are designed and how airplanes are designed, they have a lot of work ahead of them. And I think they're all still trying to figure it out. And employees that I know that are at some major airlines have said to me that they don't feel good about the future right now. They don't see that it's, you know, they said it could be 3 or 4 years before we get back to where we were. And they don't quite understand what they're going to do in the meantime. You know, how do you take
wow.
a tool and a terminal and an aircraft that were all designed to get the maximum amount of people into a tiny space and quickly get them to somewhere else? Well, we all know that that's actually against what the current thing people are looking for. They're looking for space and safety and, you know, some sort of separation from other people. Well, how do you do that when you have things that were designed that are not easy? You can't just build a new airplane in a year. It takes years and years, decades sometimes, to even engineer an airplane. Then how do you take price points of old airplanes where you're saying, yeah, we United is still using the middle seats. I think Delta and JetBlue don't use the middle seats, if I remember correctly. And it's like, well, how do you justify selling at the same price point that people want to pay, but then removing potentially 40, 50 people off your flight? So it's a lot of questions of, it's truly testing leadership. And I will say this much, in you know, for someone who does podcasts and tries to get people to tell stories, I can make the CEO stories of airline CEOs. How are they doing this? What are they thinking about? What are they even anchored to? What are the historical precedents that they're going to be using? They're kind of making it up as they go.
Well, they've been an industry historically that's, you know, been underwhelming and not great performers. And then, you know, you throw a pandemic into it, and that just, you know, blows everything up. So you're saying a little while ago that, you know, according to some of the insiders that you communicate with, have relationships with it, they're a little panicked, they're a little uncomfortable. And if I heard you right, they are, you know, thinking that could be 3 or 4 years until they go back to some of, you know, the levels that they had pre-pandemic.
That's,
I mean,
right.
That's insane. I mean, are you seeing, and this is a crystal ball question, but it just, you know, it just dawned on me. Do you think that in order for them to survive, there's are you anticipating there's going to be some pretty big changes in how they operate in their model?
I mean, by nature, it's going to have to change on some level.
Yeah.
I think if they continue to operate under the same model pre-pandemic, until they get back to where it was, I don't think that, I mean, I don't know how that would work. I could give you a great example. You know, I was actually trying to track some of the international carriers because they're an interesting variation on what we see in America. You know, we're all private airlines, right? We're not state funded, although with all the treasury money that gave out, we're basically all state funded airlines now. But look at like Emirates or Qatar or these other, you know, they are owned by the countries, they're owned by the state, whatever that is. And I think Air France is that way. There's a bunch of them that really operate that way. They have completely different goals. And even they have this interesting way of trying to adapt. So for example, Emirates is all long haul, right? Everything they do is A380s, 777 ERs. They're flying 14-hour flights in some cases, but no one's flying long-haul flights right now. The entire world has stopped flying long international flights.
Right.
Right. Some domestic operations are still happening. So when you talk about how the airline's affected, that completely wipes out the financial validity of an airline like that. But they have a different incentive, which is, hey, we make money doing other things. We're not in it for profit. Clearly, if you look at the amount that Emirates spends on the airline, you could tell they're not in it for profit. You know, what are they going to do? What are these state-run airlines going to do? I think the scary part is they may eat up all of our international travel for our domestic carriers. Because again, American Airlines might pull back on those routes. Delta might pull back on those routes. So the international airlines that are owned by the countries might say, all right, we'll take them all. We'll fly them right now empty if we have to. We'll put a bunch of money from other aspects of our economy into taking over those routes and buying those routes. And on the other side of this, will the American carriers still be able to hold their presence on the international stage? Because they don't really make their money on the short haul stuff in the US.
Wow, that's a very interesting take on that. So the on the international side, you mentioned Emirates in particular, they're just kind of, you know, sitting and waiting because they have, you know, public money, they have government money, which allows them to do it, that, you know, they don't have shareholders, if you will. And they're kind of poised to take the lunch away from the American carriers for the long hauls.
That's wow. Right. I mean, Qatar is actually the one I think might be setting the example for this, because Qatar has, from what I've understood, and again, I don't know this stuff that well, I don't track the airlines, but my
understanding
couldn't compete with Etihad and Emirates that were actually controlling a lot of the routes. And again, the different countries don't always allow any airline to come in and start being an international carrier, especially when it takes away from their local airlines, like their country organized airlines. Well, Qatar, when everyone else stopped flying, Qatar said, hey, does anybody else out there have people that are stuck that they need us to keep running our airline to bring your people back, right? Like there was months of flying people back as COVID was hitting. And they said, well, our domestic airlines are shut down. We need someone to fly and repatriate our people back to our country.
Right.
So Qatar said, well, we'll do it. And why did they do that? Well, for one thing, Qatar flies all of their supplies come on their cargo holds of their airplanes. They can't stop flying. Their entire country is pretty much isolated. So they have to use their airline to bring in all their supplies, their food, any other stuff that they need to keep their economy running. And for them to say, we're going to try to earn goodwill of other countries right now, and we're going to try to earn some of those routes. So I think Qatar has been kind of the pinnacle of what that might look like, to say there's going to be a real shifting of the international stage on the other side of this. And what does that mean for American carriers? I don't know, but I can't imagine it's a good thing.
And I think, and as you just said, so they're not making their real money on the domestic flights. There's greater profitability overseas. Did I get that right?
If you look at it as the longer an airplane flies, right, the more you don't have to do some of these quick turns and drive a lot of maintenance costs up.
Yeah, okay.
And also think about it. People, even charter users, fly international flights on airlines because they go, look, I can fly a private jet to Florida for $15,000, but I can't justify flying a private jet for $150,000 to Europe. So I'll go first class on one of the American carriers or even one of the international carriers. So there's real money coming in on those international flights.
Right.
It's hard to offset that. So I think that's going to be a real shifting of you know, again, what American carriers are going to have to deal with and contend with on the other side.
Wow. It looks even worse for them now that I'm hearing this. Jeez. Today's guest on the Profit Express, Nick Tarascio. He's the CEO of Ventura Air Services. And the question that I ask you, the question for you listening, is can we find disaster, can we find opportunity for growth in disaster? And certainly one of the industries hit hardest amidst the pandemic was the air travel business. And fortunately, a local business based here on Long Island, Ventura Air Services, has been able to pivot, if you will, and find opportunity for growth. So again, Nick, thanks for being on board today.
Absolutely.
I would like to talk a little bit, if you don't mind. Can you maybe tell us the Ventura story? Because it's a family based business. Was it your dad who started it? Did I have that right?
That's right. So it's actually it's multifamily and multi generational. So we've merged a bunch of companies together that were multiple family businesses we brought together under one roof, and we were very fortunate to just be able to, you know, bring an incredible legacy together into one name, Ventura, essentially. And my dad had started as a flight school in 1982 and a maintenance shop fixing small airplanes, and that grew up into a charter company. And then we merged with another charter company, and I kind of took the whole thing over in 2007. And it's been quite the journey, to say the least, of, you know, trying to, and you were kind of joking around about, you know, before, of being multi-generational, I had some challenge. It's a little bit like my parents gave me the keys to the car and said, just don't bring it back wrapped up around a tree.
Right.
And here I am like, hey guys, I've just been running the business through one of the most challenging global situations that's ever happened. And there's a little part of me that's like, I don't want to ruin their legacy. And they're still in the business, just to be, you know, keep in mind, it's not like just some honoring of them. They still work in the company.
Oh, so that's my next question then. So this might be somewhat of a non-pandemic question, even if you will. How do you find working with family? Because that can be a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, you love them on the weekends and holidays, you know?
Yeah. Well, that was one of my business coaches said that. He goes, you have to, even when you're mad at them professionally, you can't bring that home.
Right.
You just can't bring it home. You still got to go, you know, to the holidays and act like none of that stuff's happening. And I think that's important aspect. But it's, you know, I am extremely fortunate, and I will say, on so many levels, I look back on my life and I ask myself, just how fortunate am I? And I've gotten a lot of luck. And the reason I say that is, we are not a normal family business. And when I've spoken to other family businesses, I'm part of YPO, I've been part of Entrepreneurs Organization, mm-hmm. part of a bunch of different groups like that, the Alternative Board, which is Long Island based, I believe. And when I've spoken to other family businesses, they talk about this, like, generally stereotypical thing that'll play out, which is the father's a tyrant leader and doesn't want to hand it off to his kids, but he kind of gives the kid the title, but then really, like, runs it all behind the scenes and does everything, you know, this is the way it's going to be, and I'll have to die before I really hand the power over. I haven't had that experience. Quite a very different one, which is that my dad very early on had admitted to me that he didn't really want to manage. That wasn't interesting to him. What he loved was fixing and flying airplanes. And there's a book called E-Myth. You may have heard it from Michael
Gerber. Sure, Michael Gerber, yeah.
So that's what he talks about. He says, you know, someone loves baking and they start a bake shop, and now they're in the business of baking. They're not actually baking anymore. Well, my dad never wanted to be in the business of aviation. He wanted to fix and fly airplanes.
Right.
And my mom didn't really want to be getting stuck in all those functions. She really liked selling charter and selling flights and speaking to the customers. So when I stepped in, I basically didn't even ask permission. I just started doing stuff that they didn't want to do. And by nature of it, they were like, good, we don't want to do that. And at one point I said to my parents, I don't think you belong on the executive team anymore. My dad's reaction was, wait, I don't have to come to these meetings anymore. That's amazing.
Wow. So, I can imagine in most any other or lots of other family owned businesses, when you say that to your dad, hey, you know what, dad, we don't need you coming to the C-level meetings. And that erupting. But I mean, what a blessing that your father just, you know, wow, hey, thank you. That is unique. That really is
very unique. And again, look, we've had our challenges, we've had our disagreements. One of the things I found really important, and it's probably the single best decision I ever made around family business, was around the time we were talking about, you know, succession planning, like, you know, how does the power transition from Gen 1 to Gen 2 in the business?
Right.
Brought in a family coach who sat with even my siblings that aren't in the business. I have one sibling who is and two that are not. And I said, look, this business, when my dad started to do this, he wanted to create something to support his family. His vision was to build something that allowed us to have great experiences, to fly places together. And I realized that even though I was not obligated to honor that anymore, I knew what it was to him. And I said, this business must fit within the family, and it cannot create resentment, and that transition of power cannot ruin that. So I brought in a family coach, and we had some very uncomfortable conversations as a family.
Yeah.
And we moved through some stuff, and we removed through things that we realized that there was a lot of misunderstanding, or there were people's feelings that weren't heard. And I think in that, it cleared the air, and it allowed us to show up in a different way and say, okay, now there is a shared understanding. This business does take care of the family. And my parents have clearly trusted me to carry that forward, which meant that my dad gave me his blessing, and my siblings supported that in a high level. I mean, again, I won't get into the nitty gritty details. It was obviously a little more dramatic in the moment, but it was something that I think was important to honor. Was I don't want to make a power grab.
Right.
I want to be respectful of the fact that there are other people's feelings involved in this. And I do want to go to Christmas dinner.
Well, listen, at the end of the day, you know, what you have is family. So being able to navigate through those meetings, and listen, some of the meetings, I'm sure, like you said, they kind of got a little heated. That's natural. But you know, the fact that you got past those meetings and everything is going well, that's a huge accomplishment. So let's talk about now how, you know, you're in the, you know, air charter business is one of the services. It's sales and maintenance as well with Ventura Air Services. And before the pandemic, you have a certain clientele, a certain profile, people who seek out charter services, whether it's for the luxuries, for the convenience, scheduling, et cetera. My question then, Nick, is how has the public's perception of air travel changed? And why is your model very well suited for what's going on right now?
Yeah, I'm going to go back a little bit then. If you remember, you know, back in the 90s, let's start there. The 90s, I think private jets were a sign of success, mm-hmm. a sign of luxury and wealth, and it was admired, it was looked up to. And I think during the Obama administration, if you remember, those three automotive executives flew private jets down to DC to talk about the bailouts.
Oh, yeah, yes, yeah.
That was a turning point, because that was where, you know, Obama came out and basically publicly shamed our industry.
Yeah.
I mean, no hard feelings. It was just more of the optics of it were horrible, because it basically meant that now private jets were a sign of opulence and excess.
Right,
and
right.
From that point forward, private jets became something you don't talk about in the same way you don't talk about politics with friends. It was like, don't talk about if you fly in private jets, because if anyone ever found out you own one or fly charter, oh boy, your employees are going to be real pissed with you. Right? They're going to think bad things. So at that point, private jets fell out of the common conversation in the wealthy circles. And people just kind of kept doing it, because again, it's the people that use charter understand that this is not just about opulence. This is a tool to make business run. It is a tool. You know, CEOs work so hard sometimes. They work so hard, and much of it is unnoticed. It's in the middle of the night. It's really, they're moving all over the place. They also deserve to have family time. They also deserve to have some quality of life. And often this is the only way that can be made possible. Private jets are the closest thing to a time machine. So for a long time then, you know, through the, you know, let's say 2008-ish up to about the pandemic, it was something that people didn't really talk about. And again, we had people that were looking at it. It's still a luxury. And that was our audience. Then the pandemic hits. Suddenly, people go, wait a minute, private jets are safety. It's about safety. I don't want to be with other people, and I need to go visit my grandparents. Or for my own mental health, I need to get out of my house, and I need to go to the second house. There was an interesting trend of, it looked like whack-a-mole. So if you remember New York, we see the numbers start spiking in New York first. All of the private jets in America basically flew from Florida, from New York to Florida that week. Like, get me out of this place. I don't want to be in a quarantine. I don't want to be in what felt like a war zone.
So right.
Florida. And then if you remember, not that long after, Florida starts to spike.
Boom, right.
The jets show up in Florida, and next thing you know, they're going out west. They're going to California or Vegas or Scottsdale or Aspen. Or Montana had a big influx. So there was this incredible migration of wealthy people around the country that were just saying, I got to get out of these places. I need to just have a little bit of mental freedom here. And again, you can't fault someone for needing that. All of us needed it, just not everyone had the opportunity. But then there was this other group of people that said, look, my grandparents are older. My parents are older. I have a sick father that, you know, is dealing with some issues, and I don't feel safe because of his immunity putting him on an airliner, but I want him to get the best doctor.
Right.
So we had this whole group of people that said, look, I don't fly anywhere. I'm not traveling. I don't do vacations. I have real budget to spend on this one trip that's super critical to me. So I will use a charter plane for this one flight, and it's not even outside of my budget. You know, I wouldn't do it in normal life. I wouldn't do it as a luxury tool, but I will do it as a matter of need and safety. So we found that our value proposition organically shifted overnight. And our business, we've run... You know, I think there's two ways to look at the private jet space. You've got the NetJets and some of the other players that just focus on new. You got to buy new. Everything should be new. Well, I'll give you an example. A new mid-sized jet, which is like an 8-seater jet, Location XL is the example we use, or an XLS. You could buy one of those for about $13 to $15 million brand new. Well, if you buy a 20-year-old version of that, it's about $1.5 million. It's a pretty big difference, but here's the
big difference. Yeah.
Same speed, same seating. could not tell the difference. A customer couldn't tell the difference if the plane was painted. If the plane was painted the same, you wouldn't be able to pick it out. So for the most part, these are identical from a utility perspective. So we've always been a utility-minded company, which said, let's find a lower-cost solution to give people the same exact experience without this need for newness, because newness doesn't actually matter. It's an illusion. It's what's been sold to people, is if you don't buy new, it's unsafe. Untrue, because you probably fly around on airlines that are 40 or 30 years old. So
planes can be that old. I didn't realize that. 30 or 40.
You've gotten on Allegiant, I think, was using 40-year-old airplanes. The last, I just did a flight on American not that long ago, and I think the plane was from the 80s. And again,
really?
These planes, and it's even funnier, is that an airliner might have hundreds of thousands of hours on it.
Right.
A charter plane, like we have charter planes that are 39 years old in some cases, and they have, let's say, 10,000 hours on them. An airliner gets 10,000 hours in 3 years.
Wow.
So it's just a whole mindset that there was this illusion, if you got to buy new to be safe, there's no correlation between safety history and age of plane that we've ever been able to document in the West, at least.
So then you had the people who, I'm assuming the people who were using charter because they had the budget and the resources for it before the pandemic, they're still using it. But then you have the people who might not have used it beforehand, but because of the safety, there's a special trip, a special flight that they have resources. It's more attainable than people might think. So you've kind of been able to actually, despite the pandemic, have a broader or a new segment to your customer base, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I'd say it's been a shift, because there are some operators that were mostly business customers, and there were some operators that were focused on personal. We did some business, but a lot of personal flying.
There was okay.
A lot of personal reasons to move around between, again, New York, Florida, and places like that. So we saw business flying went to 10%.
Really? Okay.
Here, you know, in New Jersey, right outside Manhattan, one of the busiest private jets in the world is at about 50% capacity right now. And it's mostly because the business travel stopped. People are not coming in and out for business, but the personal travel has increased many, many, many times over, which is why we've been able to basically hold our line and launch new aircraft. We've actually said, well, this is the move. This is, you know, like what Qatar did. Qatar said, when everyone else is terrified and disoriented and trying to figure out what to do, strike. Set the foundation, move faster than everyone else. And that's exactly what we did. We said, if there was ever an opportunity where a door opened, this is that moment. Because what I'm banking on is that travel will not stop. People still need to move. Their patterns have shifted. So our unique way of doing it was focus on utility, give people the most effective cost, you know, the keep the cost as low as you can to offer a safe alternative to the high-end luxury solution. Because right now people don't want to spend the money if they can avoid it, but they still want to feel safe. So that's been our move. And again, we've doubled our fleet in Q4. We doubled our fleet, which is unbelievable. When I first heard about a pandemic, I was thinking, how do we make sure we don't run out of cash?
Right. How do we make payroll? Right.
Exactly. 9 months later, I'm saying we just doubled our fleet, and we're probably going to get another 50% growth this year, if not another double in 2021.
Wow. That's listen, being able to meet payroll, to have some growth is one thing. It's still a tremendous success story amidst this. But then making an investment, though, especially on big assets like that, how tough of a decision was that? I mean, that seems like a real, you know, put your chips in the center of the table, gut check kind of thing.
Well, I'd say that someone once said to me, and it was a beautiful statement, he said, if ever you're faced with a really difficult decision, just know as long as you keep searching and as long as you keep analyzing, eventually the answer reveals itself. The path opens up and you know it is. And I'll tell you what it was for me, was that I've been playing very conservative in business most of my life. Again, aviation companies, we're not sitting around on a bunch of cash always. It's always like you're riding with like fuel prices, and you know, the president comes on and says private aviation's for luxury and opulence, and then no one wants to fly with you anymore. So we've been riding waves and trying to be conservative. Well, when the pandemic came, it was actually a freeing moment for me, because what hit me was this: all of my conservative behavior will not prevent me from going to zero if that's where the world's going to go. There's a chance that the company goes out of business. Right. There's a chance that we go bankrupt for no fault of our own because the world has shut down.
Right. Right.
So there's still a chance that, you know, at that point, keep in mind, this is April and May. I'm going, there's still a chance I have no idea what I'm talking about. In fact, I didn't. But I said, there's a chance that I've miscalculated and we're going to go to zero very soon. But there's a chance that the airlines collapse and don't come back anytime soon. And private aviation will be the only tool available to pick up the slack. And I said, if I'm going to gamble on the outcome, if I'm going to go out of business anyway as one route, then I might as well invest in growth. And if I'm going to potentially catch a win, a big wave on the other side, I might as well invest in growth. So I was like, if you game theory the whole thing out, the only suitable answer was invest in growth, but make sure that we control cash if we're slightly off on our estimation. So it's been, okay, let's put the controls in place. Let's hire the right people. Let's create all these tripwires that will monitor our cash levels.
Right.
Keep adjusting, keep making small adjustments, like flying a plane, keep making small adjustments as we're trying to climb. And that was the move. I was like, there's no reason to stay conservative right now because we may get wiped out anyway. And then who cares? What did it matter what we did if we're going to get wiped out anyway?
Wow. I want to get back to that. This episode of the Profit Express is brought to you by Corbett Public Relations, promoting and protecting businesses and brands for over 30 years. Please visit them at CorbettPR.com. That's CorbettPR.com. Today's guest is Nick Tarascio. He's the CEO of Ventura Air Services. And certainly, you're aware that the airline industry was devastated because of the effects of the pandemic, of course. And the commercial airlines are still reeling, but it is a local business in Ventura Air Services here on Long Island that is not just doing well, but it's actually growing. And to my amazement and shock, and it's just great to hear, not just growing, but then investing in assets. So, and you said it very, very well, Nick. You're like, hey, listen, if we go out of business because the world goes to zero, that's out of my hands, right? Makes sense. So like Qatar, or am I pronouncing that right? Gutter, Qatar, I always...
I call it Qatar. I call it Qatar.
Yeah, okay, yeah. now could be the time for a gamble. Was this... Now, this is family-owned. This has been in your family, in your blood since you're... young kid. Has this been the biggest gamble Ventura's ever rolled the dice on?
It's the biggest opportunity I've ever been faced with. Didn't feel like a gamble. I'll be honest. It did not, because again, the only, this is why I spent the time in trying to assess and understand the reality of the situation. Right. I'd argued with reality and I'd not played out all the scenarios, which I did. I ran about 100 scenarios in my head. Of this can happen and this can happen and this can happen and this can happen, but they all led to the same answer, which is the door is open, make the move. So it wasn't a gamble. It was the only thing that made sense to do. And the other thing that was beautiful about it was I wanted to know that when I tell the story of my life, everyone that was there, everybody who was part of my team would be able to say, if anyone ever asked, did Nick give up? And, nope, I did not give up. And in fact, one of the greatest test pilots of all time. He'd survived more crashes than almost any other pilot in the world because he was flying like planes that had never been certified. The secret to survival, how did you live this? He said, the secret is to fly the plane as far into the crash as possible. And I believe that. I said, I want everyone to know that when I reconcile my life on the other side of this, even in the face of a total bankruptcy and failure, no one would be able to say I didn't give it my all and I didn't try everything until the last cent was left. So it just was like, this is not a gamble. This is an imperative. This is within my integrity. This is what I must do.
Wow. Well, that it's a great story if there wasn't a pandemic, right? You say, hey, Tim, we decided to grow our business and, you know, the time was right, tax advantages, so on and so forth. But this same story, Nick, in January of 2021 takes on special meaning. And again, that's why I'm having you on today, because I think it's very easy for listeners, for business owners, to be consumed by fear. you know, and I'm not judging. It's been tough on everybody for a whole host of reasons, whether it's economic, whether it's emotional, physical. And I think a conversation like this, and this is my hope in talking to you today, allows the business owner, the entrepreneur, whatever business they're in, to say, wow, and kind of just take a step back and maybe look at their own situation a bit differently. Might have nothing to do with air travel, probably, but yeah, just yep. in hearing, yeah, just in hearing what you've done and why you did what you did. I want to talk about it because it's pretty interesting. One of the things that in doing my research for the show that you guys do, rapid organ transplant. I found that kind of interesting that you guys would be involved in that. Critical, obviously, life-saving, obviously. How did that happen?
So part of it is that New York has a significant amount of hospitals that do organ activity. They do organ transport and organ, you know, organ donation, organ replacement. And so we happen to have the right fleet type that is fast, can fly far, and is cost-effective. Because again, at the end of the day, surgical teams are not trying to optimize for luxury. They just want to get there
right.
Get there reliably. So when you look at the fact that our company was really built on that, we can sometimes respond as quick as 2 hours we're in the air. Someone calls us out of nowhere. Hey, 2 a.m, got to go here. We might be able to get that plane in the air in 2 hours at 2 a.m. Now, not only does it have to be able to move fast, it can't break down. So we have to have incredible dispatch reliability, right? We got to have so many things running at the same time. It's such a crazy logistical challenge. Like even if you wanted to get on an airline in 2 hours from now, you'd find that hard to do. Imagine you got to coordinate the flight at the same time as just getting on the plane. So it's
right.
moving parts, but we got a lot of, you know, there's a lot of fulfillment that comes in that as well, is that we realize we've saved thousands of lives over, you know, over all the work we've done.
Sure. And
it's a really, really important part of our business. But the great thing is it's the Olympics of aviation. if you want to cut your chops as a company that operates airplanes, organ transport is the Olympics of aviation. And so we've taken those same competencies and applied it to passenger transport. And because of that, we've been able to do some very, very effective things. And that's why, again, I think our business is a lot of luck. The world met us where we were with the pandemic, but we knew when the opportunity came, like, now's our moment, make the move. We've been waiting for that wave.
Wow.
I mean, I haven't been waiting for a pandemic.
Well, yeah, I got you. Yeah. Yeah. When is this pandemic going to happen already? Jeez, come on.
Yeah. It was in our strategic plan for years.
Now, you had said that I think you became CEO in, was it 07? 07. Okay. So like most business leaders, we have certain styles of management. We have certain philosophies of management. We, now that we're almost a year into, I think it technically, I mean, it was March when it's, you know, when it all happened last year. So we're almost a year into it. Do you see any noticeable or significant changes to how you manage?
Yeah, I mean, in my values is growth mindset. And every year, I think I reinvent myself and try to shed the parts that I don't want to do. The single biggest thing that I think changed for me, this is a good question, actually, I think it really comes down to empathy, which really, that was always hard for me. Empathy was always really challenging for me. I had a hard time relating to other people for a long time. And I'd say it's a combination of empathy and vulnerability. So I was worried. I was like, you know, do I really want to tell the team that I'm afraid? Do I really say that during the pandemic? But what I realized is it's not relatable if I don't.
Right.
Like, yeah, sure, I come off like a superhero, but that's not actually what people want. Because then what that sets is we could never do this without Nick. Well, that's not very useful. That's not useful for developing a team.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Showing people that I hid that stuff for a long time. I always thought I had to be this like stone-faced, totally stoic leader of the company because it's private jets and people want to feel the confidence in their leader. Otherwise, why would they get with your company? And I went, that's just ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, if you see me get in a plane to go fly and I'm sweating, you might be like, okay, don't fly the plane. But geez, I'm a person who lives in a pandemic world that it's hurting people I love, and it could hurt my life too. And it was like, I think I need to be willing to show people more of who I am and to make it okay for them to show me who they are.
Well, you brought up two powerful, and thank you for sharing, by the way, two powerful emotions, if you will, empathy, and I think you said vulnerability. A lot of CEOs, you know, I own my own business too. And I mean, that's how I was kind of brought up. It's just like, there's that veneer, there's that kind of outer costume that we wear. And not that you're not being genuine, but we all kind of think we had to have that certain air of confidence and success. But in, you know, allowing that vulnerability to kind of shine through isn't always easy. But like you said, this is a get real moment for everybody. Yeah. You know, that's very interesting. That's good. So here, I'll go from one good question to the next. Well, I'll let you tell me if it's good after
I ask
it.
I'm throwing a lot at you.
So as you look back at this, if you had a do-over just in the pandemic, okay, because you've had a long career in aviation, obviously. Just in the pandemic, if you had a do-over, what would it be?
I don't think I would have done anything differently. I'll be honest, and I know that it's a bit of a funny answer. The reason why I say that is, let's get into some negative self-talk for a second. It is so easy to self-flagellate, to beat myself up, right? To say like, man, I wish I had done that, and oh, I would have done this. I actually am going to do something that I haven't done a lot. I'm actually practicing in 2021 a little more self-love. So I actually, given what I knew at the time, I think, and given what the team knew at the time, I think we actually did the right thing every step of the way. And so even with what I know today, I'd say I think it worked out better than I ever thought it would have. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't change a thing. That truly would be the only regret I would have if I had one, is did we make the wrong call given the information we had at the time? And I can confidently say we did not. We actually did the right thing knowing what we knew then.
Right, right. That's awesome. Today's guest, Nick Tarascio, is the CEO of Ventura Air Services, a family-owned local business here on Long Island in New York. And their focus is aircraft sales, maintenance, and air charter services. And the great message, and again, Nick, thanks for sharing it today. And I felt very compelled to have you on because I knew what you and your company have been able to do together is not just survive and get through the pandemic, which is still a great feat for a lot of businesses, but then also to find an opportunity and then to have real courage, as you shared earlier, investments in aircraft, which is, you know, huge, despite the quote unquote disaster was the pandemic. Is there anything that, I mean, this took a lot of interesting turns, this conversation, which I thoroughly enjoyed it, so I thank you. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that I was unable to uncover about Ventura that you'd like to share?
You know, I'll just share something I'm really proud of more than anything is,
okay,
I asked myself, what allowed us to get through this? Like really at the end of the day, because a leader alone can't do anything really, unless I was a solopreneur, right? Mm. What were the conditions that pre-existed that allowed us to move through this? And we just actually won a Best Places to Work award from Long Island Business News recently. And I think back—
Congrats, yeah.
Thank you. 6 years ago when I hired one of my first business coaches, he said, we're going to start on culture. We're going to start focusing on culture. And I was like, that's dumb. I want to focus on profit and how we do things. And he goes, no. We're going to focus on culture because culture creates the ingredients and the conditions for a high performing team to solve challenges as they come. That, yeah, sure. If you have a perfect plan, which we all know there's no perfect plan,
right?
Yeah, a perfect plan, you could just let it run on autopilot and it'll be fine. But that's not how the world works. And for you to be able to maneuver and challenge and pivot and pull people through a challenging time, you must have set the conditions for people to feel safe, like they're part of it, like they, like that is their family, that is their home. And I will say that I think the number one thing we did that allowed us to make it through this is spent 6 years focusing on culture, taking care of people when there was no financial reason to do it, doing the right thing because it's the right thing, and not worrying about what that's going to look like on the P&L. So I just want to, if any of my team are hearing this, I want to give a big shout out to them. This is, yeah, sure, these are some of my ideas and hard calls at the time, but this is all built on the fact that we have some of the most incredible, caring people who are aligned with what we ultimately believe as a company. And they're the reason I felt safe, because I knew if I leaned on them, they were going to come through. So I would just say for anybody, this has been an incredible lesson in what this could do to a company, the incredible disruption that can take place. Some of the best companies got wiped out.
Yeah.
I think it's because of lack of culture. It's lack of people being able to speak up and create that picture of reality. Cause I don't know what the reality is. My team tells me what the reality is. And, again, I'm just so proud of our team and bringing more people in. And some people that have ended up getting fired from their jobs or furloughed came to work with us. We've grown from 40 to 53 people over the last year, and we're trying to bring on another 20 in our next year. So that's the one thing I'd like to say. I can't stress enough. It seems so silly and trivial, but I think it is the fundamental, most important thing for a business to focus on.
So because of a business coach that you hired 6 years ago, and you thought you're going to roll up your sleeves and get into the profit and the loss, efficiencies, et cetera, that coach says, no, we're going to look at culture. And it almost, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but it almost kind of sounds like you're like poo-pooing, oh, culture, yeah, no, I don't want to get into that right now. Was that where your head was at the time?
Absolutely. I was like, I'm not paying you to help me fix them. Like, I don't want motivational posters on the wall. Let's make them bigger. And he was like, no, we're going to put motivational posters on your wall. And we're gonna like talk about our values are, right? And a lot of companies do that, but it doesn't mean anything. And he's like, that's not culture, that's propaganda.
Right.
We're gonna build real culture, which means you'd be willing not to hire, you'd be willing to fire someone because they don't have the values of your organization, even though they make you money. And I was like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
So because of that, and of course, unbeknownst to you, 6 years later, we're in the pandemic. Do you think that it was the exercise on culture that made the biggest difference? Is like foundationally?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's just like anything else, right? If some people say, like, why do you go to the gym? You know, you go to the gym so that your body can handle any of the other challenges that would come at you. And the stronger you are, the better you do with age, you'll have that muscle mass that you need. I would say that the culture building we did was the muscle mass. It was the tissue that held the company together. And when the external world's trying to pull you apart, it's the strength of that culture that actually holds you together to be able to weather those storms.
Well said. Well said. Nick, listen, I want to thank you for a great conversation today. Ventura Air Services is a great story, and I always love family-owned local businesses. I think it adds to the story. But I know you shared a lot of great stuff today with the listeners, you know, as they're trying to navigate, fellow CEOs listening, fellow owners who are listening, they're trying to navigate it. And to end on culture was super powerful. So again, thank you so much. Appreciate it, Nick.
My pleasure.
All right.